Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of a podcast named Tim. We're a father and son movie review podcast available everywhere podcasts are. So if you have Apple, Spotify, Anchor, CastBox, et cetera, just, you know, hit that little subscribe button on there and then leave a little review. Same thing for the YouTube. We're on YouTube with Star Wars reviews, with Power Rangers stuff, with some movie stuff. So we're on there as well. We just hit 100 subscribers, so thank you for everyone who did that. We're available everywhere. Podcasts are, like I said, we have a website, podcastnamedtim.com. We have social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, podcast named Tim. We're everywhere. Wherever. We're taking over the internet. Today's episode, like I said, three movies. Today's episode, we're going to be doing The Phantom Carriage, The Big Sleep, and Red Sun. We are doing this week and next week, we're traveling through the century to highlight films from 100 years ago, 75, 50, 25, 10, and 5. So this week, we're going to do 100 through 50. 100 through 50. So The Phantom Carriage, The Big Sleep, and Red Sun. I am Zach. Dad, how are you today, good sir?
Well, I don't have vids. I know it sounds like it was the coughing and the sneezing, but I am fantastic other than that.
Well, that's good. I'm doing well. I am missing my microphone. My microphone broke. So, gotta go get a new one of those.
How do you break a microphone?
So, the plug to the area where it plugs into the microphone, that area got all jankified.
Again, how do you jankify that?
The last person to be holding it was my daughter.
Ah, never mind. Case solved.
That's okay. We'll get a new one. Upgrade. So that way, next week, video quality or audio quality will be even that much better.
But yeah, you're a little, got a little bit of reverb happening there. I'm listening to little Paul's Boutique.
That's okay. That's okay. We're going underground this week. We're going back in the day, a little old school, you know, with some, you know,
basement tapes, baby.
That's right. That's right. What else you been watching other than this stuff?
Well, I watched something I'll talk about that I watched this morning. I'll talk about here in a minute when we get into the movies. But I watched. Oh, Lord, what have I watched? I've been watching Your Honor. Finished Cobra Kai.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So waiting for the fourth season of that. We love that. I mean, again, people have to understand, it's really not that great a show, probably. The acting's really not that great. The story is very predictable. Actions. Okay. It's just the nostalgia and the pandemic. I think that those two forces have aligned perfectly for this show to take off and be the sensation that it is. I think if we broke it down 3-4 years ago, it probably wouldn't have been what it is today. Maybe with just the nostalgia. But we started Sabrina last night because it's the fourth part of that. It's going to be finishing up. Again, we've been watching Your Honor. I don't think we've watched much else except for the regular movies and finished A Teacher. I started watching this morning History of Swear Words with Nicolas Cage, so I can be all educated when I'm cursing and all that. I'll know why I'm cursing and where they come from.
Mm-hmm. You
know, instead of just saying them, I need to know why I'm saying them.
That's right. That's right.
And there's probably some other. No, that was last week. Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay, that's quite a bit. I've been playing a lot of board games. A lot more Everdell. Tried my first couple rounds of Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. Going to be doing a review of that after I get a couple more games under my belt for the YouTube channel. I've been watching a lot of Clone Wars. The wife and me are watching it. She has never seen it. We're doing a chronological rewatch of that for me. And she told me she was only going to give me one episode a week or two episodes a week, and we've watched one every day. So, and as her, she'll be like, "You want some Clone Wars?" I'm like, "Yeah." It's like, so.
Maybe the pandemic has finally got to her too.
Maybe. So we've been enjoying that. And then I watched a documentary. I watched filmed in Super Marionation, which is, of course, a documentary about Gary Anderson and Miss Anderson and the whole, all the shows they did and how that all went. Some things, the two most fascinating things that I did not know that were interesting were just how big of a deal I didn't realize how big of a deal it was. One of their, and I don't remember the exact shows, but one of their shows was brought over by NBC. It was the first British show to be brought overseas for American audiences. And I think it was Stingray, I want to say, was the first full color production show on British television. So they had the first show to come overseas, and they had the first all-color television show. So I was like, okay, that's pretty good. So I watched that, it was pretty interesting. What I would have never guessed was Gary Anderson hated it. It wasn't like a Jim Henson situation where he liked puppets. They needed money at one point, and someone came to them with like a kids TV show. They did it, and they were good at it, and so they just kind of kept doing it. But he kept trying to make it more real and more real, and trying to he apparently despised puppets and the whole thing, and wanted to be a real director, and he thought it was a joke. And so I just never would have guessed that, because obviously he did so well with it, but nope, hated it.
Yeah, surprising how many shows that we didn't know. We know now more of which shows come from England because they kind of hail them a little bit, like The Office and all that. Everyone kind of knows.
Yeah.
But like things like all the way back to the 70s, like All in the Family, that was a British show. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
But so it was interesting. It was good. Got the full history and learned how the puppets work and how they had made the advancements there. And just, it was good. It's good. It's on Amazon Prime for free if anyone wants to watch it.
Nope.
I have nothing else. I'm ready to talk because I think we might have some interesting discussions for this week.
All right.
Well, before we hop into the Phantom Carriage, we're going to take a quick moment to pause and hear a word from our sponsor. So the Phantom Carriage came out in 1921, 100 years ago. So that is a bit of time. 1 hour and 47 minute runtime. It is a Swedish film, an 8.1 on IMDb. Directed, written, and starring Victor Sjostrom, I'm going to go with. Sjostrom. It is based off a novel. And tells the story of New Year's Eve, where a ghostly carriage driver finds a man and basically makes him reflect on his life. For the Rotten Tomatoes score, it has a 100 on the tomato meter and a 90 from the audience score. This was my pick for the week, and which I happen to get the 100 film, and also I typically, if we're watching one or two silent films a year, it's probably because I've forced us to view those. What did you think of The Phantom Carriage?
I was surprised it was an hour and 47 minutes, because usually, I think usually films are a little shorter back then. But I really liked it. I thought it was just completely well done. I was shocked that this was 100 years old. I'm glad that they have preserved this thing the way it looks. It looks really good. I liked the color of it. I liked the double exposure. I thought that I was very impressed.
What did you say?
I guess I said the word colors, but I didn't say her name before that. But anyway, my computer's going off the rail. Yeah, the color was great. The I was very surprised, and, you know, finding that, which I don't know the history of Swedish film, so I don't know the set decorations. Usually, a lot of these silent films are very bare boned. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a bed in the room and a door and a window, and that's about it. Right. But this thing actually had, you know, props and props that fit, and it just looked really good. And the story was interesting. You know, kind of a Charles Dickens telling, like the ghost coming back to show, or It's a Wonderful Life. You know, yeah. That story's been done a million times. But I thought, you know, I'm not a silent film guy. I like dialogue. I think dialogue is one of the most important things to make me enjoy a movie. That being said, I did enjoy this movie. I enjoyed this movie so much that I went and watched after this morning, actually, I went and watched Wild Strawberries,
mm-hmm.
which is mentioned in all reviews and anything you read about this, because Ingrid Bergman, Ingmar,
yes,
was a student of this guy, and he ended up doing, it's not really an homage, but it has some definite points. It's the same actor years mm-hmm. later, and I watched that this morning, and it's a Swedish film, and I enjoyed it as well. It was very good, very well done. So yeah, I liked it. I thought you did a fine job.
I really enjoyed this as well. This is up there. This is up there with me. Typically, like you said, if silent films to me work best, typically with the Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, you know, 1 hour, give me some sight comedy, some nice, you know, stuff like that. Because we've tried to watch a couple that had a lot more story elements to it. We watched the one about the boats, whatever that was, that sucked.
Battleship Potemkin or something.
Potemkin, yeah, we watched Battleship Potemkin, which we didn't like. I liked Hexen. I thought it had some good imagery. That was the first silent film we had discussed,
right?
And I thought that was good. But I really, really enjoyed this. I thought that the gentleman Strosom, however you say his name, David Holmes, he was great. It was a mix of silent acting and kind of modern day acting.
Yeah.
And he was such a great heel, but at the same time, you kind of wanted him to be redeemed. He the performance there was amazing.
Equally well in Wild Strawberries.
Okay.
He pulls the same kind of feeling out, and he, again, is not exactly, he's not the worst person in the world, but he is being redeemed through things that as he travels through his last days of his life. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah, and speaking of Bergman, we did watch another movie. We watched a movie of his that would obviously have some parallels to this, The Seventh Seal. This is way better than The Seventh Seal by a mile, in my humble opinion. I'm sure you would agree.
Well, yeah, because I didn't really care for that.
Yeah.
And Max von Sydow, who's the star of Seventh Seal from Ingmar Bergman, is also in Wild Strawberries.
Oh, okay.
So that must have been one of his go-to. They're all Swedish, I guess, or yeah, around that area.
And, of course, Charlie Chaplin says on IMDb and the trivia says, this was the best film ever made.
It's definitely well done. I mean, that's not something I know a lot of. It had a list of a lot of big-time directors and actors that watch this, like, on a yearly mm-hmm. rotation for them. I wouldn't say I would do that, but I would not turn away from watching it again.
I would definitely watch it again, and I want to watch it again, just to catch some of the... Because what's interesting is it jumps around, which can sometimes be hard to follow in a silent film, because it just, you know, you don't have a way to really delineate between flashback and modern time, but something about the way they shot it, it made sense. Like, it was easier to follow than most. Like, you knew a flashback was happening.
Flashback within a flashback sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Still, I kind of got it.
Yeah, you were able to follow it, and It is on the 1001 Movies You Must Watch Before You Die. It's on the Criterion Collection. It is... there's one other scene, I guess, director that does obviously like this movie. Mr. Stanley Kubrick, who obviously borrowed from this film. With the scene from The Shining with the axe. That was directly from this. Which apparently this was also an homage to, I think, a D.W. film as well. D.W. Griffith film from the year a couple years beforehand had a similar X scene. Broken Blossoms was what it was called. But yeah, I thought that David Holmes was just an... it was very impressive that they were able to give us an incredibly in-depth character of that nature who's a shithead... who you also kind of want to have redeemed. And then you have the Salvation Army woman who loves him because she has that weird dynamic where she's cared for him, so now she's falling in love. But then she realizes the wife. And there's just so much going on in this film. And it works. And the special effects work. I love the concept of if you're the last person to die on New Year's Eve, you're the one who has to help the death get the bodies for the next year. That was a great concept that I'd love to see played around with some more. And special effects were good, I thought, for the time as well.
Yeah, I was really surprised. Did you are you going to watch the remake?
Maybe.
I haven't decided. I'm back and forth. I might watch it now that I've watched Wild Strawberries, just because I found the Swedish language to listen to quite interesting. I don't know why. I've watched subtitle movies. I don't mind subtitle movies, but it's like a mixture of French and German. It's got the French kind of flow, but it's got the German punch to it.
Right.
Well, it was very interesting. So I might actually watch the remake.
Yeah, I would like to see someone else. I don't know who, but I would like to see someone else play around with this again.
I would like to see an updated version of this. I think that would be quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who I would give the reins to. I'm trying to, I don't want to say the regular people that we always say.
No.
I don't know. I think this would be an interesting tale, though, for somebody to take on and update.
Yeah.
I don't want them to go crazy, though. I don't want them to overdo. This doesn't need to be some kind of, you know, crazy supernatural.
Yeah.
Don't overdo it. Just give it a little modern day touch. I think this would play well in the theater. On HBO Max, if the right person got a hold of it.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and I want to talk about two quick scenes. One, I laughed out loud at the pure villainy, like the petty villainy of this one scene when the Salvation Army woman sews up the jacket and he's walking out and he sees, he first of all, he asks, he's like, did you do this? The woman says, no, the other woman did. I'll go get her. And she brings her out. He walks towards the door and he waits for the woman to see him. And then he knows the second he sees her, he gets this little grin on his face and then rips out the men's right in front of her. I busted out laughing because I was like, what an asshole. But it was like a muscle movement moment. And the other just diabolical evil part was, did I get the impression there was, when he had returned back with the wife, he had come home drunk again. He had clearly not lived up to his promise. And he was lording over the children. Was he trying to get them sick? And did he purposely get her sick? Because she was like, you should at least not get them sick. And then
that's what I got from it, yeah.
Okay, because then she tried to run away, and he was like, it's not as easy to run away from me this time. And I was like, did he, like, purposely, like, get her sick with whatever he had?
He had pneumonia.
Yeah.
Well, I think's what they said. Yeah, I don't know. I did kind of get that vibe, too.
Like, what an asshole.
Was it a regular occurrence in the 1920s in Sweden for women to carry arsenic around in their bra?
She was ready, man.
I was like, oh, time to do it. You know, I've seen money. I've seen tissue paper. I've seen women walking around modern day with cell phones in their bras. But I didn't know arsenic was kept in their bras.
Gotta be ready.
Or whatever drug it was.
Gots to be ready. Yeah, it just... I was very impressed with this movie.
I wouldn't go all the way to Bicycle Thieves, but it's right under it for the silent film that I've liked.
Yeah, no, this is under Bicycle Thieves. But for older films, because what that Bicycle Thieves was, what, 42, 38,
30, somewhere 38? In there, yeah.
This was really good. This was really good. I was very happy.
It was interesting that it wasn't that normal, quick little, I don't know how to describe it, like the Charlie Chaplin and the Buster Keaton movies, the quick movements and the, it was actual slow, and it was just like a regular movie. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't have to go out to that, overdone facial expressions and stuff like that. It was awesome.
There were also large chunks of the movie where, I don't want to say large chunks, but it's noticeable in a silent film where they're clearly saying something, but they're not providing you with the dialogue. Right. But you knew what was going on, even with the not over the top acting.
Right.
So I just, I thought this was great. This is a movie I think everyone should watch. It is 1,000% deserving of being on the 1,001 movies you should watch before you die.
So I think this guy was probably the inspiration for the Swedish Chef.
Maybe.
That reminded me of him when I saw him older.
But yeah, David Holmes, what a great character.
Yeah, and the fact that this guy was the director and the star, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, I had top, well done.
Never heard of this guy before. I might check something else out by him because I'm pretty impressed with him.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Well, let's go ahead and go to your movie. We're working our way. So we went 100 years. Now we're going to go to 75 years. We're going to do The Big Sleep. It has a rating of past, which is always my favorite when you get to that era. Past. 1 hour and 54 minute runtime. 7.9 on IMDb. On the tomato meter, it has a 97%. Audience score 91. It stars, directed by Howard Hanks, and stars Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall, John Ridgely, and Martha Vickers. It is you probably could guess it's a movie from the 40s, and Humphrey Bogart's in it. He's a private detective. He's hired by a wealthy family to check in on a blackmail situation, but things, of course, are not always what they seem, and there's always more to the plot. This was your selection again for the week. I'll go ahead and give my thoughts. I kind of nothing this movie. I thought it was both generic and overly convoluted for no reason. There were a couple of witty lines, as was always written in the film noir stuff. I think there are better Bogart movies to watch. I don't get the appeal of this movie. Your turn.
Well, I don't get the appeal of Humphrey Bogart in general. I've never quite... I mean, I get that he's an icon and I can take him in short spurts. But I love this era of movie because I like the look of them. I like the black and white. I like the shadows. I like the smoke-filled rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like these movies, just like the reason I didn't like Chinatown. I don't like movies that go on and on and on and then have to have, oh, it's now time to explain it. Because we realize nobody knows what's going on, so let's explain it. He's an interesting character, explain it, but I don't like the whole, and then this and always all that, and then, but no, that's what this and that was. I want to see things unfold, and I don't mind a little red herring. I don't mind a total swerve at the end, but I want to kind of know what's going on, or at least be able to piece something together as I'm going. And like you said, I didn't care enough to even try at this point.
Yeah.
The big sleep was just that. The big sleep.
Well, you knew the one sister was evil.
Yeah.
From the beginning. But it wasn't, it just wasn't interesting. I don't know how to describe this movie. It was, I mean, like, let's think about another film from, I don't know exactly what year it came out. It's from the 40s. Double Indemnity, which I can never say. That's a great film noir. They piece you along. There's a twist at the end. That's also like kind of like prime film. But I mean, just.
Well, they, like the Alfred Hitchcocks of that era. Notorious and Indiscreet and all those where, you know, you kind of know what's going on throughout it. You think you know who the bad guy is, and it ends up either being it really is the bad guy, and they solve it, or it's really he was really being good, not bad. You just misunderstood his motives. This one was just like, let's stop the film and explain what's going on now.
Well, I also thought they just threw too much at you.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, one sister has a gambling problem, one sister is a drug addict, there's a ex-boyfriend of theirs that the dad liked, that the gambler guy, his wife ran away with him, so this guy's missing. It's just like, it was too much, and I didn't care enough about the characters. So I just, to me, I don't get the appeal of it. There were some interesting things that I saw in the trivia, I guess we should highlight, but one of my favorites was, it says, Warner Brothers studio chief Jack Warner gave Howard Hanks $50,000 to purchase the rights to the film. Rumor is he spent between $5 and $10 and pocketed the rest.
Hey.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently, Mr. Bogard was a little bit into the sauce here and there during the film. Showed up day one and had about 5 or 6 drinks and was the director was not happy, and they limited him to 1 beer per day, I guess. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it says. But
it was boring.
Yeah,
I didn't care.
And I don't. You might know this better than Howard Hanks, or Hawks. Excuse me. I went and looked at his IMDb, and it says that the other movies he's known for are big westerns, which you may or may not like. I have not seen Red River, Rio Bravo.
I've seen Rio Bravo. It's a John Wayne.
Yeah, that seems to be his the main movies he seems to be known for is the western. So maybe he was more of a western guy than a film noir guy.
I don't think this was a directing problem. I think this was a
script problem. I think it was a script problem largely. Because, yeah. But in film noir, like you said, there's normally a lot of great shadows and iconic shots, and I can't.
People made these movies a hit because Humphrey Bogart was a man's man at that point, at that era. That's what men wanted to see. And the women loved the love story, but the real love story between Bogie and McCall. I mean, they had an epic love story. Yeah. And so, but other than that, I don't really get the appeal of this movie.
So I would definitely. I'm glad we agree on that. I thought it was just me when I was watching it. Had you seen the film before?
No.
Okay.
That's why I picked it. I've seen some of the other ones, or at least know more about them. this one I've heard of, but I didn't know anything about it. And then I read the critical reviews and were like, oh, cool, it's going to be good.
I'm glad we were, because I was watching it and I was like, is something's wrong with me? Why am I not getting, why am I not connected with this?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and hop to our next film, Red Sun, which came out in 1971, has a PG rating, 1 hour and 52 minute runtime, a 6.9 on IMDb, on the tomato meter, no tomato meter, but a 60 from the audience score. It is directed by Terrence Young, stars Charles Bronson, Ursula Andress, and I can never say his name, Toshiro Mifune? Yeah, sure. The guy from all the other great movies, from all the Kurosawa movies. And I don't know how to say the guy's name. There's a lot of people with weird names in this movie. Anyway, it came out in 1870. Or excuse me, the film takes place in 1870. There's a, you know, train robbery. But the big to-do here is that the Japanese ambassador is bringing a ceremonial sword for President Lincoln. Why does it say 1870? I thought it was 1860. Anyway, they're bringing a ceremonial sword for the president, and one of the bad guys gets it. Now we're on the hunt for revenge and to get the sword back and all that good stuff. I technically picked it, but it is kind of, quote-unquote, the main feature. What did you think of Red Sun?
I don't like westerns.
I agree. I'm
not a Charles Bronson fan. I liked this movie.
I liked it too. It should have been an hour and a half.
Yes.
But
I liked it. It's definitely Cordura that saved the movie to me. I just liked the whole interesting cowboy and samurai.
Yes. Together. Yes.
That was interesting. That the actors pulled again. Charles Bronson, I've never understood the appeal to Charles Bronson. Haven't gotten it. The director must have been a crazy person to actually have an American that speaks English, a Japanese that pretty much only speaks Japanese, a French man that only speaks Frenchman, a Switzerland girl who kind of spoke broken English, but together in a movie that you got to get. I don't know how he did that.
And a British director, I believe.
Yes. That's insanity in its own, which I know happened a lot of times. I've never understood movies in that era, like the spaghetti westerns and stuff, where they shot, you know, one actor's actually speaking Italian and one speaking English, and somehow it worked out. I guess you just know your lines and you can just wait for your cues and don't worry about the rest.
Yeah, and then filmed in Italy. So it's
quite an interesting background. I love the whole sword part, stealing the sword.
Yeah.
I liked that actually the most commanding actor on here was not the ambassador, as you first kind of thought. It was actually the other guy. He was actually just the samurai that was guarding it. Yeah, it got a little crazy, you know, there when they had when they started bringing in the Indians and the attacking and the this and that, but it still was enjoyable.
Yeah, it. I wish it would have been trimmed a little bit, but I did really enjoy it. It's kind of a Sunday, just throw it on film. I really enjoyed Charles Bronson in this. I thought he was. He had the good one-liners. He was a good leading man, I guess, a good Western leading man in this. And like you said, the dynamic between him and the samurai was just great. I'm sure you noticed the one connection between the two of them.
I don't guess I did.
Well, as I mentioned, Toshiro was in Seven Samurai.
Oh, okay.
And Charles Bronson was in The Magnificent Seven. So we had both people from those two films, which was interesting. I wonder if they talked about that, by the way. That would have been an interesting conversation.
I would imagine at some point it was brought up, but although he doesn't really speak English very well, so
yeah.
I had one problem with this movie. This movie has one big flaw.
Okay. Do we get to see Lincoln?
No.
More sword fighting?
No.
Okay.
The end there, the pointless shooting of the samurai, and then the 1 second turnaround to realize it was all kind of for nothing. If you were going to resolve it his way anyway, why'd you guys shoot him?
Right.
Huh?
Yeah.
That's the only thing. It just was kind of, I don't know. I think I would have just had him maybe think about it, because there was a little too much of him trying to double cross the samurai. I get it at the beginning.
Yeah.
But then after he kind of made his way, because I know he wasn't honorable, but I would have liked him to have been a little more honorable. Try to get away, try to do this, but as soon as you gave your promise, I think that should have been the end of that. They should have maybe worked together.
Yeah.
I didn't like that he shot him at the end, when then turned around and saved him anyway, or got his situation. That was a little weird, but it didn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. There's another film actually this week that I would like to see a remake of.
Yes, but not Western. I want to see it in space.
I would actually like to see this as a Western. I'd like to actually see this actual film remake.
I want to see this as a Star Wars movie. Or a Mandalorian
episode. You can do that.
Story. Yeah, this story is a Mandalorian episode where he's maybe with some of his armor or something has been some kind of way to where he's got to work with somebody he doesn't want to work with to get, or maybe it's already been done. And yeah. I don't know. Maybe he works with the Jedi and the lightsaber is what gets taken. No, the dark saber. Maybe.
That's right.
Yeah, we could work this little story into something, but
yeah. Someone much smarter than us figure that out. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. John Huston. Of course, John Huston of some fame. He's been in some films. He said that Red River, Stagecoach, and this were three of the best Westerns ever made. Which we've covered Stagecoach. And I actually prefer this to Stagecoach.
Yeah.
So, this is actually maybe the best Western we've covered.
Soleil Rouge.
What do you think? The only other one I would say is King of Cowboys. But that's also just kind of a weird, just, that was fun.
Yeah, that was, I don't know if I can call that a Western. Yeah, this is a good Western. I'm not really into Westerns. But again, I think what saved it was the Japanese culture.
Yeah, I agree with that. Is that mashing of cultures that made it work. I also, I don't know if this was, I'd be curious to find out, when the Camachos, I guess, the what they called them, was that the Native American tribe?
The Comanches.
When they captured the woman and they put her with the raw hide around her neck and they got it wet, and then as it dried up, I guess it expanded to start choking her.
Right.
That's a real thing, but that was like, that's good TV. That's also, that's good shit. Like, that's a,
I have a feeling that's a real thing.
I was like, okay, that's pretty effed up, but I liked it. Yeah, I'm, you know what I'm most impressed about this week is that I gave you a Western. We watched a Western, a film noir, and a silent film. And you said you liked the Western and the silent film so much.
I know. It's weird.
I know.
Maybe I am growing as a person.
We've watched so many films now, we're just becoming enlightened. Well, I think, honestly, after watching all these movies, I don't know how many we've done at this point, I do feel like I can appreciate every genre and every different movies more. But it also means that I get like an average or bad movie, Wonder Woman.
That's so funny.
That is just,
I was saving my end comments to apologize for saying Wonder Woman 84 sucked, because that was an insult to people that suck.
Yeah, but yeah, just when you watch one of those movies now, you're like, oh yeah, that sucks. Just that much more. Which I feel like a few years ago, I'd be like, yeah, you know, it was fine. So we are definitely growing as individuals.
Oh, I hope not.
Yes, we don't want that. Well, I'm happy. I was happy with this week. I wish The Big Sleep would have been better. I was happy to watch a film noir, but, you know, they can't all be winners.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay. Well, let's get into next week. So next week, we're continuing. We're doing a movie from 25 years ago, a.k.a. 1996, a movie from 10 years ago, 2011, and a movie from 5 years ago, 2016. What do you have for me, sir, from 1996?
A movie that I've mentioned numerous times.
Okay.
Both on here and to you privately. Finally, I was so happy when I plugged in 1996 and it came up. I was like, yes, finally. Sling Blade.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, for 2011, we're going to be watching the acting chops of one of the greatest actors of all time. We're going to watch Gary Oldman in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And then for 2016, a movie I've never seen, but wanted to, it highlights a very famous person from our neck of the woods. We're going to be watching Hidden Figures for 2016.
Oh, that was okay. Yeah, the women in NASA.
Yeah, the NASA women.
Yeah.
So we've got a nice mix of movies.
Because I actually grew up with NASA and Langley in my backyard.
I know. Right down. I think there's actually a plaque when you visit downtown Hampton. I think she has a plaque down there near the Space Museum.
Yeah.
Space Museum. So. Have you ever seen either any of these? I know you've seen Sling Blade, but have you ever seen any of the other ones?
I saw Hidden Figures.
Okay. But not Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
I don't think so. I know the title. I know what the poster looks like.
Yeah.
But since I can't quite come up with the story, I must not have seen it.
Okay. I figured you had seen Hidden Figures, but I have not seen it. I've been wanting to watch it since it came out. Just had not had the opportunity. So... we will watch those three films. That's a good mix. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I think so.
And then that'll be... I look forward to... I'm going to make a little collage or something to highlight the movies we watched through the decades. So I have three rows. I'll have... Or the through the century. We'll have our three rows... This week's episodes, next week's episodes, and then the bottom row will be what we did last week, the three movies from 2020. So it'll be, here's how film is going. Here's the trajectory. And I think...
Well, it would have to go up for Wonder Woman.
Yes. And I'm hoping to make this century recap an annual tradition.
I like it so far.
Yeah, I like the idea. So... and I have no clue what the gimmick's going to be the week after that. I was pitching myself on some ideas. Didn't know if you wanted to maybe do movies that bombed at the box office was a thought.
Yeah, that'd be all right. That'd be interesting.
Box office bombs? Okay. So that's what we'll do the week after that. I don't... Just if you
might... The main event's going to be Ishtar.
Ishtar or Howard the Duck, I guess.
Hey, Howard the Duck is a fine film. I
said movies that bombed.
Well, you're right.
So take that how you will. We'll figure that out. So and we've already watched Battlefield Earth, so don't worry. That's not coming.
That's true.
and then I got the idea because of Wonder Woman 1984 and its precipitous drop.
Yeah, Ken was, we talked about that. I've talked him out of watching it. They were actually all set. They've all had COVID.
Yeah.
It's all family. So they thought, well, since we've had it, you know, we'll still mask up and we'll head out. We'll actually go to the movies and see it on opening weekend because it's such a... And I don't remember why he said they didn't end up going. But now he was thinking about they hadn't even got to watch it on HBO Max yet. And I said, yeah, no, don't bother. Because he, like me, like, loved the first. He thought the first one was great.
The daughter watched the last little bit, the part with Cheetah and a couple little parts with it. And so now she's been, let's watch the real Wonder Woman. I was like, no, let's watch something else. So I've been trying to direct her towards other superheroes. So
let her watch the show. Because it's campy enough That's and something. Colorful enough where I think she would actually like it.
I am going to probably do that next. Yeah. So.
And yeah, I got her a Wonder Woman outfit for Christmas. She can put it on. And
she'll be set.
Yeah.
So.
It's the campy 70s show. Is 1 million times better than 84, which is sad because it ain't great.
Right.
So anyway,
but it's
we've been watching Doctor Who stuff.
Oh yeah. You said you finished Tenet, correct?
Finished Tenet. We're about halfway into Matt Smith's first season. Still like Matt, but not as well as Tenet. I just can't get off of David Tennant. I think he's just amazing.
He is amazing. Is, correct me if I'm wrong, the first season of Matt Smith, was that The Silence?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
We're still, the crack is showing up in most episodes except for, I think the last one, it was a little side story that didn't get into it. But yes.
Because that was the first season of Matt Smith, if I remember correctly, was the best one.
Yeah. I mean,
of his run, if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a while since I've watched.
Jeffrey eats fish fingers and custard.
Disgusting.
That sounds disgusting.
But he does know that bow ties are cool.
Bow ties are cool. That's right.
All right, well, I think that about wraps up this week. Again, next week we're going to be watching, now I'm forgetting, Sunblade, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and Hidden Figures.
We'll see how much I can annoy you over the week and during the show with my Billy Bob Thornton imitation of Sunblade.
I look forward to it.
Here's a little preview. You ready? I like the way you talk, too.
Appreciate it. You should do the whole episode like that.
Don't challenge me.
There was actually, before we get off, there was a fantasy football podcast I listened to, and it's a big one. This is like a small, this is like ESPN level, you know. It is on ESPN. And they had their Halloween episode, of course. And one of the guys dressed as Joe Exotic. And he's like from New York or something like that. You might know him. His name's Matthew Berry. He's a writer. He wrote Crocodile Dundee 2. I think that's his big to do. But he's a writer. And he's been in a couple little things here and there. But he decided to do his Joe Exotic impression for the whole episode. And it was rough to get through. Yeah.
Sounds like that would be.
Yes. So, well, we will see you all next week here on a podcast named Tim. Don't forget to subscribe to this show. Leave a rating or review. If you listen to this long, leave a rating or review. And, of course, check us out on YouTube as well. Goodbye, and we'll see you next time.